Hello and welcome to the International Soccer Podcast by Canada Soccer Files. I'm Kevin.
And I'm Connor. Today we will be previewing Copa America 2021 Group A. In our next podcast, we'll be looking at Group B,
Right.
which is the other group in the tournament.
Yeah, just two groups here. We're gonna do a preview of both of them. And within each episode here, we're going to do a team by team overview, and we'll also do an overview of players, but that will be pretty superficial. We're considering a deeper dive podcast into that if we have time, basically. How is the podcast formatted, Connor?
So yeah, there's three parts to the podcast. So in part one, we're going to begin with an overview of the group. We're going to look at the rankings, the odds, the head-to-head records, and a comparison of the size of each country. And for this podcast, we're going to also do a brief tournament overview, to kick things off.
That's right. That's right. So there's an introductory section. Anyway, part two of the team by team will be looking at their long history, their recent history, their qualification records, and a brief overview of their players.
And finally, in part three, we're going to have a discussion of each team's prospects for the tournament, as well as our predictions for the group.
Okay, great. What's your shirt today, Connor?
Today I'm wearing Cardiff City, classic blue shirt for me.
Great. And I have a Euro 2020 shirt showing no bias in South America. And let us begin with part one. We're going to do kind of an overview of a few things before we get into the team by team stuff. Connor, can you start us off with an overview of this tournament, of the tournament?
Yeah, so this is the 47th edition of the Copa America. In the beginning, it was a bit of a mess, to be honest, because the tournament was held every year or two, but inconsistently. And in 1959, there were actually two tournaments held in the same year, if you can believe that. From 1983 to 2001, the tournament was held every 2 years and odd-numbered years. A tournament was then held in 2004. And then from 2007 to 2019, the tournament was held every 4 years. Plus, there was a special centenary competition in 2016. This tournament was scheduled to be held in 2020, after which the tournament would continue to be held every 4 years, but in even non-World Cup years, which would be the same as the Euros. But the 2020 event was postponed to this year due to the coronavirus pandemic.
So the Euro is called Euro 2020. What's this one called?
This one, they have changed the name. They are going with Copa America 2021.
Okay, all right. Well, there is no qualifying for the Copa America. 1967 was the only time that there was a qualification. Colombia and Ecuador hold the sad reputation of being the only two teams ever to fail to qualify for a Copa America. After that, they competed in smaller groups, but from 1998, it was one large group. All 10 CONMEBOL teams compete together. They play each other home and away. Typically, in the Copa America, 12 teams compete with CONMEBOL, the 10 CONMEBOL teams, including usually two invited guests from other confederations. So the Mexicans are the most frequent participants, but other teams from North America and occasionally Asia have also competed. So the tournament was scheduled to include Qatar and Australia, but both teams withdrew for this cup. So instead of the usual 12 teams divided into three groups of four, this tournament will see the 10 teams divided into two groups of five. Each team will play every other team in their group once, and the top four teams will advance. 8 out of the 10 teams, Connor.
Yeah, most of the teams getting on to the round of 16, which will then be a knockout.
No, round of eight. It'll be a quarterfinal.
Correct.
Yeah,
Yeah, quarterfinals.
and I do think like basically the top team in one group would play the weakest team in the other group, right? The fourth place team.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah, so there is some purpose to the group stage.
Yeah, the 2020 Copa America was supposed to be co-hosted by Argentina and Colombia, and then, of course, being postponed to this year. However, Colombia were dropped on May 20th, 2021, due to security concerns amid protests against the government of that country. 2 days later, on May 22nd, Argentina went into a 9-day lockdown due to soaring COVID-19 cases, and domestic football was suspended. Due to the circumstances, Argentina were stripped of the tournament. Brazil then offered to host, and will be the host for the 2021 Copa America. But it's a controversial decision, in that Brazil has been one of the worst hit countries by COVID-19 overall. And they continue to suffer from high cases. So a bit of a strange decision.
Yeah, very much so. I'm sure Argentina has gotten angry in the past about tournaments being taken away from them, so I'm sure they're not happy about this either. Let's get down to business a little bit with Group A. It's known as the South Zone and contains Connor.
Yeah, it contains the southern teams. It contains Argentina, Uruguay, Chile, Paraguay, and Bolivia.
Okay, well, Argentina last won the Copa America way back in 1993. Since then, 10 tournaments have passed with them failing to lift the trophy. Lionel Messi has yet to win a major international tournament. Could this be his time?
Quite possibly they've been close before. Uruguay, they won the tournament in 2011 when Argentina hosted. They were also the winners of the inaugural South American Championship in 1916.
Okay, third team is Chile, who were winners of the tournament in 2015, and they also won the special centenary edition in 2016. That means they have won two of the last three tournaments.
Yeah, an impressive record. The fourth team is Paraguay. It's been 40 years since they last won the Copa America. Though their best recent record or performance was finishing runners up to Uruguay in 2011.
All right, and Bolivia's solitary success came in 1963 when they hosted way up in the mountains. They last made it to the final in 1997, which was a year where they also hosted. Connor, let's take a look at the rankings of these teams.
Sure. So we'll go through the rankings. I'll discuss both the FIFA and ELO World Rankings, which are just two different systems for ranking teams. Both are formula-based systems, which award points based on actual performance and take into account variables such as the relative strength of their opponents. So FIFA has long had a world ranking system, and the current FIFA World Ranking system is actually based on a modified version of the ELO system. But ELO system has kind of been an unofficial system and has been used for other tournaments such as chess, but was adapted to soccer in 1997. So FIFA, again, those are the official rankings, but we include ELO rankings because they've proven to have a better predictive capacity, and in general, we find it to be a bit more accurate.
Yeah, I think they kind of base the ranking on a longer period. Is that right?
Yeah, I believe so. I think they take a longer period of time into account, which leads to less volatility than you sometimes see in the FIFA rankings.
Okay. All right. Well, tell us where the teams are at.
So Argentina, they are eighth according to both ranking systems. They are the second highest ranked team in South America heading into this tournament, behind only Brazil. Argentina reached the world number one ranking in FIFA in June 2015, for the first time in 7 years. And they were first place in both ranking systems in June 2016. 2.5 years later, in December 2018, they had dropped to 11th in FIFA and 13th in ELO, but they have risen a bit since that time. Anything to add, Kevin?
Not really. They've always kind of been in the top 10. In 2004, that's actually the only time they were first in the ELO system, except for June 2016. Generally quite strong.
Right. Uruguay, are next. They're ninth in the FIFA rankings and 11th in ELO. So really just behind Argentina, and are the third ranked team in South America overall. They were as high as second in the FIFA rankings in June 2012, which shortly followed their 2011 Copa America success. And they were fifth in ELO at that time. Other than a brief period in December 2017 when they fell to 21st in the FIFA rankings, Uruguay have maintained a position in the top 20 in the world in both systems since 2010.
Yeah, well, we're going to see when we look at them individually that they do go through lulls. One of those lulls was in 1998 where they were 76th in the FIFA system, but they were only 25th in the ELO system. So that kind of illustrates what we said about those two systems.
Yeah, for sure. Next is Chile. Chile entered the tournament ranked 19th by FIFA and 18th by ELO, so pretty consistent. They are the fifth-ranked South American team. They reached the heights of fifth in FIFA and third in ELO in June 2016, following their back-to-back Copa America successes, so perhaps not really surprising that they rose quite a bit after that. Back in 2003, they were 80th in the FIFA rankings and 57th in ELO, but they've mostly been in the top 25 in both systems for at least the past decade.
Yeah, well, kind of newcomers may view them as one of the stronger teams in South America, but in fact, this is a really good period for them, and they're really not one of the stronger teams in South America, except for recently.
Great. Next are Paraguay. Paraguay are 35th in the FIFA rankings and 25th in ELO, and are the seventh-ranked team in South America overall. For the past 6 years, they've tended to hover between 30th and 40th in both ranking systems, often a little bit higher in FIFA. They dropped to 85th in the FIFA rankings in June 2015, but were never that low according to the less volatile ELO rankings, where they were 35th at the time. So a huge discrepancy between the two systems there.
Yeah, Paraguay tend to jump around a little. They can have really good years, and then they can have long periods of weakness. A kind of an interesting team there, because you don't know what you're going to get from them.
And finally, Bolivia. They are the lowest ranked team in South America. They're 81st in FIFA rankings and 53rd in ELO. Their recent high point was 49th in FIFA and 41st in ELO in December 2017. And that was a rise from 106th in FIFA rankings and 60th in ELO just 18 months earlier in June 2016.
Yeah, they're generally the weakest team in South America, but there's some interesting details about Bolivia that we'll get into. Are you going to also take us through the odds for this tournament? We got the odds to win the whole thing here.
Right. So Argentina have the best odds in the group. As I understand it, a dollar bet would return $3.50 if you bet Argentina to win the tournament. Uruguay and Chile are a little bit further back at about $8 and $13. Paraguay, $38 to one, so quite a jump behind Chile, and then Bolivia are huge outsiders, at with the odds of basically $1 returning close to 190. So again, just in summary, Argentina the best odds in the group, Uruguay and Chile a little bit behind, and then yeah, Paraguay and Bolivia pretty long odds, and Bolivia would be, I think, a real shock.
Yeah, so I think those also work as odds for passing the group stage and maybe in the order that they're expected to. Does anything jump out at you there, Connor?
I think the only thing is just how far Bolivia are behind the rest of the groups. I mean, their history doesn't show they're a strong team, but it's quite a significant drop-off.
Yeah, you bet. And the tournament is outside of Bolivia, so that's kind of significant, as we'll see soon. Let's go to the head-to-head records, and basically Argentina have a superior record to all of these teams, They play each other quite regularly, and we'll just kind of point out a few of the big games between them. Argentina has 11 wins. This is over Uruguay. 11 wins, 4 ties, and 6 losses. They lost in the final of the 1930 World Cup, the first World Cup, which took place in Uruguay, and Uruguay won that 4-2. Actually, Argentina have kind of lost all the big games between them, despite having a better record. And in 2011 Copa America quarterfinal, which you said before was in Argentina, Argentina lost that on penalties to Uruguay. Moving on to Chile, it's 17 wins, 4 ties, and 3 losses for Argentina. So basically they win a lot, but not recently in those two tournaments that Chile won that you've already talked about, 2015 Copa America and the 2016 100 year anniversary. They lost both times to Chile in the final, and they lost on penalties both times. Moving on to Paraguay, you can see actually they have, Argentina has 10 wins, 13 ties, and 3 losses. So Paraguay likes to tie a lot. We're going to see that's true in the recent World Cup qualifying. The biggest game there was the 2015 Copa America semi-final, and Argentina won that by a score of 6-1. Bolivia, Argentina has 17 wins, 5 ties, and 6 losses. So actually, Bolivia doesn't do too badly there. In the 2018 World Cup qualifying, Bolivia won that leg at home. We're going to see that they actually are quite a tough team at home.
In fact, all of Argentina's losses to Bolivia have come on the road.
Oh, is that right?
But you'll talk about that little quirk later.
Yes, definitely. Great, good touch there. Okay, Uruguay, also, apart from Argentina, they have winning records over Chile, Paraguay, and Bolivia. And over Chile, it's 14 wins, 5 ties, and 6 losses. They met in the 1987 Copa America final, and Uruguay won that 1-0. With Paraguay, it is 10 wins, 5 ties, and 7 losses, so fairly even there. They met in the 2011 Copa America final, and Uruguay won that one too. So they tend to win their big games. They won that 3-0 to take the title in 2011. And Uruguay versus Bolivia, it's 15 wins, 6 ties, and 6 losses. And really, no outstanding games, because Bolivia usually doesn't make it that far into a tournament. But in both 2006 and 2010 World Cup qualifying, Uruguay won the home leg 5-0 in both cases. They tied the away leg both times.
I will add there, Kev, that all of Bolivia's wins against Uruguay have come in Bolivia.
Yeah, come at home. Yes, if listeners don't know the reason for that already, we'll talk about it. Chile versus Bolivia. Again, they haven't really met in the finals the Copa America, just the group stage of the 2015 Copa America, and that was in Chile, and Chile won 5-0. So outside of Bolivia, Bolivia can go down by big scores. And finally, Paraguay versus Bolivia. Paraguay has a superior record. Oh, no, I didn't do Paraguay versus Chile. And Paraguay versus Chile. Paraguay has the superior record, 13 wins, 3 ties, 9 losses. One of their most interesting meeting was in the 1979 Copa America final. So at that time, it was a home and away thing. They didn't have the tournament in a specific country. And in the home leg, Paraguay won 3-0. And in the away leg, they lost by a narrower score. And so they had to do a playoff game on neutral ground, and it was tied 0-0 after extra time. So the officials decided that the win would go to Paraguay on goal difference for that one. Finally, Paraguay versus Bolivia. It's 10 wins for Paraguay, 6 ties, 5 losses. I fear that you have something to say here, Connor.
All those 5 losses have been in Bolivia.
In Bolivia, okay. But in the 2022 World Cup qualifying recently, Bolivia actually tied Paraguay at home. So that was a good result for them. Woo, it's tough with 5 teams in there, Connor.
Yeah, you did great, though. Interesting information.
Great. Let's move on to the section of size and population of each country, which I think you're going to handle.
Yeah, we'll go through this fairly quickly. Argentina has 45 million people. They're the third largest country in South America in terms of population, but they're the largest team in this group. Next, Uruguay has just 3.4 million people. They are the smallest country in South America in terms of both size, geographical, and population.
Yeah, given that size, you'd have to say they're the most successful team in soccer. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, pound for pound or in terms of success per size of population, it's an incredible record they have, punching well above their weight.
Mm-hmm.
Chile has 19 million people. They are the sixth largest country in South America. They also are the southernmost country in the world, stretching all the way to the bottom of South America. And they're one of the longest. They are 24 times longer than their average width. So fun fact on Chile.
Uh-huh.
Next is Paraguay. They have 7 million people. They are one of two landlocked countries in South America, the other being group mates Bolivia. They are the second smallest country in South America in terms of population. And then finally, Bolivia has 11.5 million people. Their capital city, La Paz, is located more than 3.5 kilometers above sea level. So they're way up in the Andes Mountains. They are the eighth largest in South America in terms of population. So just in summary, Argentina has 45 million people, which is double the next closest. Chile, who have 19 million people. And then we have the three smallest countries in South America all competing in this group. Bolivia with 11.5 million, Paraguay with 7, and Uruguay, the smallest, with just 3.5 million people.
Okay, great information there, Connor. And I think we are ready to move on to our team by team, part two of this podcast. Let's begin with Argentina. And Connor, do they have any nicknames?
Yeah, they're known as the El Bicelestes, which means the white and sky blue, tribute both to their flag and their uniform.
Great. Okay, well, we're going to divide this team by team into four sections. So one will be their participation in tournaments, have they entered or not entered, and their major achievements. Then we're going to look at the World Cup, and then the Copa America, and finally a kind of a summary of the team. And the Copa America section will be a little bit longer than the World Cup because we're focusing on the Copa America here. So when we do World Cup, we will focus a bit more on that tournament. So here we go with Argentina. Sorry, I'll just move to the graphic here. They're one of the senior teams of international soccer, having been involved from the beginning. However, they withdrew from 3 cups in a row after that. In 1938, they were upset not only at traveling to Italy to play just a single game, but also that the 1938 World Cup was scheduled to be in Europe. It was supposed to be in South America because the original agreement was to alternate back and forth. In 1950, they did not enter, even though it took place in South America, in Brazil. A conflict with the Brazilian Football Federation was the reason. And it also caused them to withdraw from a couple of South American championships. It's unclear why they withdrew from the 1954 World Cup, but it is a shame because they had won three South American championships in South America prior to 1950, and three out of four after that. So I think they would have had a great team to bring to the World Cup in 1954. As far as performances go, their success started in the World Cup, in the first World Cup, with the second place finish. They're a world-class team, having been in the World Cup final five times and winning it twice. In the Copa America, they have been in the final 26 out of the 39 times, having withdrawn from four competitions, and they have won it 14 times.
Wow, great record there.
Mm-hmm. So let's look a bit more specifically at the World Cup history. The history began with a second place finish, as we said. They lost to Uruguay there, who hosted the tournament. But the road was pretty rocky after that. We saw that they withdrew from tournaments until 1958. And when they got the chance to prove themselves in 1958, they were humiliated with a 6-1 loss to Czechoslovakia and a group stage exit. So they're kind of an unfortunate team in many ways, Argentina. They hit rock bottom in 1970. That was the only year they failed to qualify. But their fortunes did improve from 1974 onwards. In fact, they qualified for every cup and they passed the group stage every time since 1974, with only one exception. They failed to pass the group stage in 2002. I'll talk about that. They finally hosted in 1978, and they won their first title there. Then they won again in 1986 and finished second in 1990. So a real world power in the 70s and 80s. In 2002, they had a stunning qualification campaign, but that was followed by failing at the group stage for the only time in their modern history. In 2014, they reached the final again after a 24-year wait, and this was their fifth time in the final, but there they lost to... Connor, over to you for their modern history.
Yeah, in 2014, they lost to Germany, in the final, in extra time. It was 0-0, but Mario Götze scored the winning goal. So unfortunate there. In the 2018 World Cup, Argentina finished with a win, a draw, and a loss in the group stage, drawing Iceland, losing to Croatia, but then scoring a late winner against Nigeria to advance to the second round. However, in the round of 16, they lost to France in an entertaining 4-3 game, briefly taking the lead at the start of the second half, but then conceding three straight to the eventual World Cup champions.
That's right. Okay. Okay, and we're going to take a look at their World Cup 2022 qualifying campaign a bit later. But for now, we're going to move on to Copa America history. Ooh, there have been so many, I can hardly fit the little graphic we have onto the screen. As Connor said, there was a tournament every year at the beginning. In regional competition then, they hosted the first South American Cup in 1916. They withdrew from cups here and there in 1939, in 1949 to 53, and then in 2001, interestingly, over security concerns in Colombia, which is the reason Colombia isn't hosting this one. Until 1967, over the course of 26 cups, they never finished lower than third place, except for 1922 when they finished fourth. Their strongest period was 1945 to 59, winning six out of seven titles, although they had withdrawn from two tournaments in the middle. As I said, with the World Cup, we didn't see this strength on the world stage because they didn't enter the World Cup in 1954. Strangely, though, the mid-70s and mid-80s was the opposite. That was their strongest period on the world stage, but their weakest period in the region. They were knocked out of the group stage for three cups in a row from 1975 to 83. And after 1959, they didn't reach the final again until 1991. They won that year and they won again in 1993. And that one bears some mention. They beat Brazil 6-5 on penalties in the quarterfinal and Colombia 6-5 on penalties in the semifinal. In the final, they won over Mexico. I actually don't think Mexico is allowed to join this tournament anymore. Do you know about that, Connor?
No, I'm not familiar with that, but you're right. They haven't been there for a couple tournaments.
I think a couple of times they sent their better team to Copa America, and CONCACAF was upset about that, but I'm not sure. Maybe we'll get into it when we get into Gold Cup and Mexico. They have not won the Copa America since 1993, though, and indeed they didn't even get beyond the quarterfinal for 10 years after that. After withdrawing in 2001, they reached the final 4 out of 5 times, but always they took second place. They had especially high hopes in 2011, buoyed by having the great Lionel Messi and by hosting. However, that was the one time they didn't reach the final, ousted by Uruguay in the quarterfinal on penalties. The last of those second place finishes was in 2016, and you're going to take us through the recent history, Connor?
Yeah, so... as we mentioned, Argentina were runners-up in both 2015 and 2016. Certainly, you could forgive them for having a sense of deja vu. They played Chile both times in the final. They tied 0-0 both times in the final, and then they lost on penalties both times, so a real heartbreak for them. 2019 was one of their more underwhelming tournaments. In the group stage, they lost to Colombia, tied Paraguay, and then beat Qatar. They beat Venezuela in the quarterfinal, but then lost to Brazil 2-0 in the semis. They did, however, get some small measure of revenge on Chile by beating them in the third place match to take bronze.
Okay. Well, the fourth part of our team view is a kind of a summary. So they remain a really strong team, but they actually are better than their record, which can only be described as a drought in recent years. Since a successful period in the early 90s, second place in the 1990 World Cup and Copa America wins in 1991 and 1993, they have had no titles to boast about since then. Aggravatingly, they finished second in 4 of the 5 Copa Americas from 2004 to 16, and second in the 2014 World Cup. All this when they're trying to make a mark in history for Lionel Messi, whose greatness needs to be justified with a title. They had some controversy on the team. Some internal fighting, or I think fighting between the players and the FA. Do you know if that's cleared up, Connor?
I believe it is now, but it did affect their performance in 2018 in the World Cup, which, as we mentioned, led to an exit at the round of 16.
Right. Okay. So, and I think Lionel Messi was about ready to leave the team there. Let's take a look at their very recent history. Over to you, Connor.
Yeah, Argentina have had a good recent run. They're undefeated in kind of their last 10 games, couple draws, but some good wins both in friendlies and in World Cup qualifying, including a 1-0 away win in Brazil in a friendly in November 2019. Oh. Going on to their World Cup 2022 qualifying, so far, they've played 5 games and are undefeated there as well. They have a home win against Ecuador, but then tied their other 2 home games against Paraguay and Chile. But they've won on the road in Bolivia and in Peru. So after five games, they sit second in the table with three wins and two draws, behind only Brazil.
Yeah. Home ties with Paraguay and Chile, though, that's not great, is it?
Not great, but so far it hasn't seemed to hurt them too badly in the standings.
That's right. Okay, let's go on to kind of a superficial overview of players, and we'll rotate that around scorers in the 2022 World Cup qualifying campaign.
Yeah, the top goal scorers so far for Argentina, each with two goals, are Lionel Messi, of course, though both his goals are from penalties. Nicolas Gonzalez, he plays for Stuttgart in Germany. And then Lautaro Martinez, who also has two goals. Martinez is a 23-year-old who plays for Inter. He's got 11 goals and 22 appearances for the national team, so a big up-and-comer. One of those he may replace over recent years, of course, is Sergio Aguero. He's not on the goal-scoring chart so far for World Cup qualifying, but he has 41 goals over 97 appearances for the national team. So is always a threat for them and probably will step up in this tournament.
Great. Okay. That is it for Argentina. Any closing comments on Argentina?
No, let's move on to Uruguay.
Okay, let's do that. And we'll begin again with their tournament participation and major achievements. So they're a senior team also, having competed in and actually hosting the 1930 World Cup. They're also the most participatory nation. I got through it. Having entered the South American Championship from its beginning in 1916 and missing only twice. So that's fewer than any other team in the longest-running football tournament. That plaudit would be unassailable had they not missed the World Cup in 1934 and 1938, both of those taking place in Europe and most South American teams missing them. Less arguable is their claim to be the most successful soccer country in the world if size is factored in. The nation of how what was the population?
Three and a half million people.
Oh, okay. Has a record that only the largest countries can aspire to. They are considered the third strongest team in South America, but that's actually a bit arguable, as we'll see. They certainly were the strongest in the early years, winning two out of the first four World Cups. One of those... oh, no, I'll get into that later. They never won the World Cup after 1950, though, but they did finish fourth three times since 1950. Their success holds in the South American Cup, too, although the times don't actually coincide. Overall, they lead the region in Copa America wins. I'm going to say that again. They lead the region in Copa America wins with 15 titles. That compares to Argentina's 14 titles and Brazil's 8. So 8 of Uruguay's wins there were as host. And every time they've hosted, they've won.
Wow, what a record.
Uh-huh. Okay, let's go on to their World Cup qualifying, kind of a brief overview. They hosted and won the first World Cup, as I said, and then withdrew from the next two. They won a second title in their second entry in 1950, beating host Brazil in the final. Have you heard about the Maracanana? The Maracanã? I'm going to stop just trying.
Yeah, an upset there. I think that was the most watched World Cup game in history. I think the attendance was pushing 200,000 or something like that.
Wow.
And most of those left in tears because Uruguay upset Brazil. But do you have more information on that?
Yeah, they certainly did. Well, no, not really. We maybe get into it when we talk about the World Cup in more detail. But we'll talk about it generally here. Their success kind of comes in waves after that. They reached the cup twice in a row in 1966 and 1970, and then again in 1986 and 1990. And their best result in that period was a fourth place finish in 1966. They also finished fourth in 2010, And that's actually began another wave of success, which has lasted up until the present. But in between those successful periods, about 20 years apart, were lulls. And the lulls actually grew in length each time. So the most recent one from 1994 to 2006 saw them fail to reach the World Cup three times and get knocked out at the group stage in the other in 2002. So a bit of a drought in the World Cup there.
Yeah, more recently, Uruguay have qualified for three straight World Cups. In the most recent World Cup in 2018, they won all three games of a relatively easy group, though, it has to be said, against Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and Russia. They knocked out Portugal in the round of 16, but then lost to France in the quarterfinal, losing that game 2-0. So like Argentina, losing to the World Cup champions in the knockout stage.
Uh-huh. Okay, let's move on to the Copa America history. And it's kind of hard to fit onto the screen here. Okay, so the history of the South American Cup is really long, as you can see if you're looking at the graphic. It was played every year or two, even during the wars from 1916 onwards. Uruguay won six out of the first 10 from 1916 to 1926 and almost always came in the top two until 1942. After that, they slipped to third or fourth with a low of sixth place in 1949. As Connor said earlier, 1959 had two tournaments. They finished sixth in the first one, and then they won the second one. From then until the mid-80s, the Cup was every 4 years, and they won three of the six Cups in that period, including back-to-back wins in 1983 and 1987. From 1987, the Cup went back to being every 2 years. They won again in 1995, beating Brazil on penalties in the final, but then had a fairly flat period after that, which matches their World Cup record. In 1997, for example, they were grouped with the three weakest teams in South America, but they lost to Peru and host Bolivia and fell at the group stage. One of only four times that they fell at the group stage after or from 1979 onwards. They finished third in the group stage for four tournaments in a row from 1999 to 2007. So even a second place finish in the tournament in 1999 masks an overall weakness in that period. However, a fourth place finish in the 2010 World Cup started a resurgence in both tournaments, and that was followed by their Copa America title in 2011. That title gave them more South American titles than giants Brazil and Argentina. And they continued this good period by reaching the final stage of every major competition, including the Confederations Cup, except when they failed to pass the group stage of the 2016 Copa America Centenario. But now I'm getting into your territory. Recent record, Connor?
Yeah, winners in 2011, as you mentioned. In 2015, they lost to Chile in the first knockout stage. 2016 was a bit of a surprise as they failed to advance. They lost to Mexico and Venezuela in that tournament. And then beat Jamaica in a consolation game. In 2019, they won their group ahead of Chile, Japan, and Ecuador, but they lost to Peru in the quarterfinals. That was in penalties, and Luis Suarez was the only player to miss his penalty.
Oof.
So quarterfinals in the last tournament, that's something they will be hoping to improve this time around.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, the recent, this is moving into the summary now. The recent strong periods sees a really cohesive team under manager Oscar Tabarez, who has been the manager of Uruguay since, take a guess, Connor.
I think I know this one. I think it's since 2006.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, he's 74 years old now.
Yeah, that's right. And under him for most of that time has been the controversial Luis Suarez, memorable as a bad boy for an incident in the 2010 and 2014 World Cups. but really he's the jewel of their team. Okay, yeah, we won't get into the actual details of that unless you want to, Connor.
No, we can move on to their recent performance.
Okay, let's go with that. Okay, so in recent history, they were in a fairly flat period until 2010. And I think we've pretty much covered this. They've come out of that period and been pretty good in this decade. Let's take a look at their very recent performance. With their recent matches, Connor?
Yeah, most of their recent games have been in the 2022 World Cup qualifiers, so I'll touch on those in a second. Before that, though, in 2019, they had a string of friendly games. Most of those were played on the road, and they went undefeated with 3 wins and 3 draws.
Great, including a tie in Argentina. Let's look at the World Cup qualifying for 2022.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a mixed bag for Uruguay so far. They started off with a good win against Chile, but then lost to Ecuador on the road. That followed up another good result, beating Colombia away. But then they lost at home to Brazil and most recently tied Paraguay at home. So their record has 2 wins, a draw, and 2 losses from 5 games. So that sees them sitting right in the middle of the table with 7 points from their opening 5 games.
Yeah, and I got to say, that's where I'm kind of used to seeing them. They kind of hover around that intercontinental spot. Okay, how about the players? Let's just go down to that. And no surprise there, Luis Suarez is on top. And some people may be familiar with Edinson Cavani. His dad wanted to name him Edison, but actually spelled it wrong on the birth certificate. I don't know which one he goes by in spoken language, but it's Edinson Cavani.
That's a little bit of trivia for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, Suarez leads the way. He has four of their goals in qualifying. Also with the goal, as well as Cavani, are Maxi Gomez, who plays for Valencia, as well as Darwin Nunez. He's a 21-year-old who plays for Benfica. He's got 2 goals in 4 appearances for the national team. Their captain is the influential Diego Godin. He's 35 years old. He played for Atletico Madrid for a long time, but now plays in Cagliari in Italy.
Right, and you were also going to talk about the manager, but I think we already did that.
Yeah.
This team's getting a little old, Connor. A lot of these guys, great as they are in their 30s. You said Diego Godin was 35. Are you concerned about that for Uruguay?
I think long-term, yes. They do, like Suarez, Cavani are both in their 30s as well. They've kind of had a really good period over the last decade. And a lot of those same players that we've mentioned, goalkeeper Fernando Muslera would be another one. They've kind of been there throughout that whole period. So it's been they've had some great results and some great runs, but I think the team that's carried them through that is getting to the end of their playing day. So they'll need younger players coming through. Darwin Nunez hopefully can be someone who steps up for them, but they're going to need a refresh, possibly with the manager as well.
Yeah, but we've seen they also go through lulls in their career. So I would be a bit worried about entering another lull once these guys have retired. Okay, are we ready to move on to Chile?
Yeah, let's talk about Chile. Do you want to lead us off?
No, I want you to tell us their nickname if they have one.
Yeah, their nickname is La Roja, which simply means the red one.
Okay, great. And I think we actually forgot to talk about Uruguay's nickname. Maybe you can jump in with that at some point.
Yeah,
I'll
mention that right now. They're known as La Celeste, which is the sky blue. So once again, sticking with colors. the theme so far.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, let's take a look at the tournament participation and major achievements. They, again, are as senior a team as any can be, having participated in the first World Cup and being in the Copa America since its inception in 1916. By the way, this isn't true of all South American teams, just the ones we've done so far. They withdrew from most of the Cups in the 1920s and then a couple of times around 1960. They also withdrew from the World Cups in 1934 and they didn't enter in 1938. They suffered an expulsion for both the 1990 and 1994 World Cups. I don't know if we're going to get into that story, but otherwise they entered all competitions. Their best World Cup finish was third place, hosting in 1962, but 2010 and 2014 involved passing the group stage twice in a row for the first time. In South American competition, the same recent period is also their high point, and having never won a title before 2015, they did it twice in a row, as we've heard, in 2015 and 16. Is that a surprise to you, Connor, that they've never won a title before that?
I think, like you mentioned, because they've been a dominant team or a consistent team in the World Cup, and they have those two tournaments, people might think of them as having always been a strong team. Certainly not the case. I was certainly surprised that their win in 2015 was their first.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll take a look at their overall career here. They're generally an average strength team in the region, qualifying for about half of the World Cups. As we know, half of the South American teams qualify. So that puts them at kind of par. After reaching the group stage in 1930 and 1950, they didn't qualify until they hosted in 1962. That gave them their best result with a third place finish. They reached three cups after that until 1998, but fell at the group stage every time, and they were banned in 1990 and 1994. I will tell the story, because it's a good one. Early in the 1990 qualifying campaign in a game in Brazil, the goalkeeper, what happened was the fan threw a firework onto the team, and the goalkeeper used that to feign injury. I guess the aim was to cancel the game that they were losing 1-0 and force a replay. But it proved a ruse. Officials figured out, from cameras that he wasn't injured at all, and he was severely punished, or the whole team was. He himself was banned until 2001, I think. They let him back in. But Chile as a team was banned from the 1990 World Cup and the next World Cup in 1994. So they came back to qualify in 1998, and they reached a round of 16, despite tying all three group stage games there. But it would take until 2010 to reach the World Cup again. But in 2014, it became a hat-trick of passing the group stage, only to be knocked out by Brazil in the round of 16. And nevertheless, when combined with their performance in the Copa America around that time, it became their strongest period in history. That may have ended when they failed to qualify in 2018, but perhaps you can tell us more about that.
Yeah, the 2018 World Cup qualifying campaign, they had 8 wins, 2 draws, and 8 losses. So kind of an up and down campaign. That saw them finish 6th. They were actually tied for 5th place with Peru for the final playoff spot, the intercontinental playoff spot, but they missed out on goal difference. They had some good results. They beat Brazil and Argentina at home and actually beat Peru twice, but their road form was generally quite poor. They won 1 and lost 3 to the 4 teams that finished below them.
Yeah, well, home and away is still pretty, maybe a little more important in South America than it's become in Europe. Would you agree?
Overall, I would agree. Yeah, and maybe just the fact that the countries play Even though there's only 10 countries, they cover such a huge area, much larger, South America being much larger than Europe. So that perhaps being a factor, the different types of geography you encounter.
Yeah, okay, great. Let's take a look at the Copa America record. After 99 years of trying, they won their first Copa America in 2015, and as we've said a couple of times, won the next one after that. Prior to that, they came second three times in 1956, 1979, and 1987. The Cup began in 1916, and they were there from the start. They finished fourth in each of the four and then withdrew from five of the next eight Cups. So no consistent patterns really emerge except for the period, a period of strength around 1955 and another in 1999. Unlike 1955, the 1999 success in Copa America was reflected in World Cup play. But unlike World Cup play, it has endured to the present day, even beyond their biggest peak around 2015. So third place in 1999 followed on the heels of losing all of their games in the group stage in 1997. But actually, they didn't do much better here. Their fourth place finish earned on a record of 2 wins and 4 losses. Moving on to 2004, that was the only time in this millennium where they fell at the group stage. So two quarterfinal finishes followed. A humiliating 6-1 loss to Brazil, and perhaps even worse, a loss to Venezuela in 2011. But they stormed through 2015 when they hosted, beating Uruguay in the quarterfinals and Argentina on penalties in the final. Lest that be attributed to home advantage, they repeated the feat in 2016, where they took place in the USA. That was where the Centennial Tournament is. They crushed Mexico 7-0 and won on penalties over Argentina in the final. That period also may have come to an end given their performance in 2019. You can tell us about that, Connor?
Yeah, 2019, they finished second in their group behind Uruguay. They advanced and where they met Colombia in the quarterfinals, so they beat in penalties. But then they lost to Peru 3-0 in the semifinals, so quite a big loss there. They played Argentina in the third place match, and despite having beat them in the two previous tournaments to win the tournament, they lost and went home without a medal.
Okay, I'm sorry. I think I took some of your recent history there. But we'll move on to the summary. Actually, Chile has a reputation for being a rough team. They've taken at least one red card in every tournament since 2010, except for 2014, although they took 4 red cards in qualifying in 2014. While they will likely not remain as powerful and successful as they were around 2015 and 16, their strength in South America overall has gone up in this millennium compared to the last. And let's move on to recent history. And maybe you can tell us about their recent matches.
Yeah, so like most of the teams, they had a series of friendlies at the end of 2019. Chile winning home games against Guinea and Honduras, so not the toughest opposition, then also picking up draws in Argentina and Colombia. And since that, most of their recent games have been World Cup qualifiers. So Chile started out with a loss to Uruguay, and then they tied Colombia at home before beating Peru 2-0. That seemed to put them back on track, but they lost to Venezuela, 2-1 on the road. So a disappointing result there against one of the weaker teams in South America. They recovered to a degree with a draw in Argentina. But after 5 games, They only have one win, along with two draws and two losses. So they sit with just 5 points and seventh out of 10. So some work to do if they are to qualify for the 2022 World Cup.
Yeah, well, let's take a look at their players because that may be part of the story. Well, we only have a couple of scorers there, but both of those guys, I hope I'm not stepping on your heels here. Both of those guys seem to be aging, Connor.
Yeah, you're right. Arturo Vidal and Alexis Sanchez have all their goals in qualifying so far. Sanchez is 32 years old and is his Inter Milan teammate. Arturo Vidal is 34 years old. A lot of players, though, are in their 30s. Eduardo Vargas, Gary Medel, goalkeeper Claudio Bravo, Maurizio Isla, John Beausejour. These are all players in their 30s. So kind of like Uruguay, a bit of an aging team, and the success they've had in recent World Cups and Copa Americas, you know, maybe due a little bit to a kind of a golden generation of players that they've had for the past decade. But as these players age out, they're kind of heading into an uncertain future, and will need young players to step in.
Yeah, I think even in 2019, they weren't expected to do as well as they did. I mean, these players may be looking old for their club teams, but they seem to be still pretty active for their national team. And yeah, we forgive Gary Medel his roughness because he played for Cardiff, right?
Absolutely. Won a glorious season in the Premier League. Nonetheless, ended in relegation, but he was probably our best player and probably one of the best players Cardiff have ever had. He was phenomenal that season. Pleasure.
Yeah. It's funny. If a guy like that is on your team, you like his roughness. And if he's on the other team, you don't.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's move on to Paraguay. And how about their nickname?
Well, they seem to have two. One is the Albiroja, which of course relates to their color, the red and whites, which is the color of the striped uniforms. But also, and I'm not sure if I'm going to say this right, the Guaranis. It's the name of one of the most important tribal groups in that area and also the name of their currency. So two names for Paraguay.
Yeah, that's really cool. Okay, let's take a look at their tournament participation and major achievements. Like most South American teams, they're a senior team, having participated in the 1930 World Cup and, like others, missing the two tournaments in Europe after that. But they participated in every cup since 1950. Their best performance was in reaching the World Cup finals in 2010. Their first Copa America was in 1921, so a little later than some of the teams there. They missed the first three editions. From 1927 to 1945, they withdrew from half the cups, four in all, and withdrew again in 1957. After that, they entered every edition, and they've won the tournament twice, in 1953 and 1979.
Yes, so Paraguay failed to qualify.
Oh, hang on. I think I'm supposed to do the World Cup history.
You are indeed. I will talk about the recent history after that.
Sorry, I put it in the wrong place there. Okay, well, World Cup history. They've reached the World Cup eight times. Their longest period of absence was from 1962 to 1982. Prior to that, they reached the Cup three times in 1930, 1950, and 1958, but they were knocked out of the group stage every time. They returned in 1966 and advanced beyond the group stage. In fact, advanced beyond the group stage four out of the five times they reached the Cup. So 1998 to 2010 was their best period with four qualifications in a row in that time, 1998 to 2010. Despite the consistency in passing the group stage, which they only failed to do in 2006, They never got past the round of 16, so they kind of got one step in and then they were knocked out. They failed to qualify, though, after 2010. Maybe you can take us through that recent history.
Yeah, and in 2010, they actually reached the quarterfinals, as you had mentioned previously.
Oh, what did I say?
Oh, just that it was round of 16.
Sorry about that. Okay.
Yeah, 2010 reached the quarterfinals. But since that, they failed to qualify for the last two World Cups after reaching four in a row, as you mentioned. In 2014, they finished ninth out of nine in the South American qualifying. There's only nine teams because Brazil qualified automatically as host. So they won just three of their 16 games, so a really poor performance. In 2018, they finished seventh out of 10 in qualifying and once again failed to qualify for the World Cup.
Yeah, well, I said you never know what you're going to get from Paraguay. And that quarterfinal finish in 2010 was their best finish, and they followed that up with their worst finish ever. Okay, we will move on to the Copa America history. They were a force in the early years of the South American Cup, placing in the top four in every entry from 1921 to 1953. But it was only in 1953 when they won their first cup. They did not do as well from 1955, taking second place only once, until they won their second title in 1979. They reached the semifinals in the following tournament, a period of strength that was reflected in their qualification for the 1986 World Cup. But their strong World Cup qualification run from 1998 was not reflected in Copa American performances, reaching the semifinal only once between 1987 and 2007. This included their quarterfinal exit when they hosted in 1999 and a knockout at the group stage in 2001, which is a fairly rare occurrence in the new millennium. 2004 saw them beat and finish ahead of Brazil in the group stage, only to go out to Uruguay in the quarterfinal. 2007, get this, Connor, started with a 5-0 thumping of Colombia.
Wow.
Yeah, but also ended at the quarterfinal where they themselves were thumped by Mexico 6-0. In 2011, they tied Brazil at the group stage and beat them at the quarterfinal stage on penalties, winning the shootout just 2-0. 2-0 for a second place finish, their best result since winning the title in 1979. Can you guess, or do you know the minimum number of penalties? I mean, a penalty shootout 2-0, I've never heard of that.
That is the lowest I think I've ever come across.
Yeah, I think you'd have to miss about six or seven penalties for that to happen. A penalty shootout in the quarterfinal would become a feature in three out of their four cups from 2011 to 2018. Winning the 2015 one. I think all of those shootouts were with Brazil. So they won in 2015 to eventually finish fourth, but they lost in 2019 after an extended shootout of 18 shots with only seven of them converted. The tournament where they did not meet Brazil for a shootout was the 2016 100-year edition. But they earned only a draw in that tournament. They were knocked out at the group stage. The most exciting thing that happened in that tournament was the opening coin toss in the game with Colombia. The coin landed on its side in the grass.
Yeah, looking at their most recent tournament in 2019, they advanced as a third place finisher in their group with a record of two draws and a loss. They tied Argentina and Qatar, but then lost to Colombia. So there was three third place finishers. Two of them advanced. Japan also had a record of zero wins, two draws, and a loss, but a worse goal difference. So they advanced from the group stage without a win. However, they lost to Brazil in penalties in the first knockout round in the quarterfinals. But I guess given their record, taking Brazil to penalties has to be seen as a decent result.
Yeah, good point. And they did it three out of four times, so and won twice. So that is pretty good. Okay, let's go to the summary. Paraguay's run of successful qualifications for the World Cup from 1998, and even more so their success in passing the group stage of most of those cups, is a bit uncharacteristic, both in comparison with their overall history and in light of their Copa America record, where the quarterfinals or the top eight is their average result. That they failed to qualify in 2014 and 2018 actually brings the World Cup record back to the mean.
Great.
Okay, and let us take a look at how they've been doing nowadays with their recent matches, Connor.
Yeah, at the end of 2019, they had a string of friendlies all away from home. Couple, two wins, two draws, two losses, kind of against middling teams. They played Saudi Arabia, Bulgaria, Serbia, Japan, some of the teams they played in that run. World Cup qualifying has actually got off to a decent start. They played five games and are undefeated, but four of those have been draws. Their only win was an away win in Venezuela. They have also tied Peru and Bolivia at home. The latter perhaps a bit disappointing because Bolivia don't often get points away from home. But they've tied Argentina and Uruguay on the road, so some good results there. And they sit in fourth place currently after five games. They're tied with a couple teams on 7 points, but so far fourth place is good for automatic qualification if they can maintain it. But we'll see.
Yeah, I think it's funny that they tied Argentina because we saw in their head-to-head record they have as many ties as they do one of the teams winning or losing. So they tend to tie Argentina quite a bit and did again here. Let's go on to their scorers. Take it away, Connor.
Yeah, Angel Romero has scored four of the six goals in qualifying so far. He plays for San Lorenzo in Argentina. Some names that may be familiar to followers of the Premier League include West Ham's Fabian Balbuena and Newcastle's Miguel Almirón. But a lot of the team plays either domestically in Paraguay or in neighboring Argentina, along with a couple players elsewhere.
Yeah, I find it interesting. They don't seem to look at the MLS, the North American League, as a retirement league the way Europeans do. Do you have any comments on that?
Yeah, I think a lot of players in Central and South America who maybe not able to go or not able to make it to Europe, I think the MLS is a great route for them. And some, like Miguel Almirón, started with Atlanta, had a great season, and then earned a move to Newcastle after that. So it's a great route, either as a stepping stone or as a destination. One of their other goal scorers in qualifying, Gaston Jimenez, he does play in the U.S. with the Chicago Fire.
Yeah. Well, it's a boon to the MLS league to have them and other South Americans there.
Absolutely.
All right, let's move on to our fifth and final team, Bolivia. And again, we'll start with their tournament participation and major achievements. Despite being among the senior teams, having played in the 1926 Copa America and the 1930 World Cup, they've never had much success. Their participation in both World Cups in South America in 1930 and 1950, but they did not enter the first four European Cups in 1930 and 34 and 54 and 58. So they were at just the South American tournaments there. From 1962, however, they've entered every World Cup And they've qualified for the World Cup three times, but twice of those were by 1950. And in none of those three cases did they pass the first round. In Copa America, they had not formed a team until 1926, and so they missed the first nine Cups. But after participating in 1926 and 27, they withdrew until 1942. They also withdrew from four out of five Cups in the late 1950s, so very patchy at the beginning, but they participated consistently since 1963. They won the Cup in 1963, in fact, and they had one other good spell in the mid-90s. However, they almost never passed the first stage apart from those successes. But I think the key point to note about Bolivia and Ecuador to a slightly lesser degree is that they play their games in the capital, La Paz, which you mentioned as being the highest city in the world. In fact, Ecuador is also famous for this, but La Paz is much higher than Quito. And this gives them a really big advantage as visitors struggle to catch their breath. Comments on that, Connor?
Yeah, like you said, one of the highest cities. I think it is the highest capital city in the world. It's at 3.5 kilometers above sea level, or 12,000 feet above sea level. So it really is difficult for teams to acclimatize to the thinner air, as you mentioned. So they have one of the most stark differences between home form and away form among all countries. And the fact that they play their games at such high altitude is a major reason for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Anyway, let's move on to their World Cup success. We'll see that that plays a huge role. Their World Cup success is limited to qualifying for three tournaments, but they didn't pass the group stage in any of them. The first two were in the early World Cups held in South America, and I've covered that. We'll move on to their other qualification in 1994. That period coincides with a relatively good period in Copa America also. In the tournament in 1994, they started with a respectable 1-0 loss to Germany, and then they tied South Korea, but they still finished last in the group. Beyond that, success can only be measured in the strength of their qualifying campaigns. They had a couple of competitive campaigns in the 1970s, especially in 1978 when they reached an intercontinental playoff, but there they lost to Hungary. They came close in 1992 when they finished tied at the top of the group, but Uruguay's better goal difference left them out in the cold. From 1998, the qualification format became 10 teams, each playing each other home and away. So as Connor said, they do quite well at home, but they're very weak on the road. And they usually finish 8th or 9th in that group of 10. 2002 was the best year, finishing 6th, but that was followed by their worst year in 2006, finishing last.
Yeah, in 2014 World Cup qualifying, they finished 8th of 9 teams. They lost all their matches on the road except for a surprise draw against group winners Argentina, but they had just 2 wins from 16 overall, so a very poor performance. In 2018 World Cup qualifying, they finished 9th of 10, so once again second bottom. They lost all their away matches, but as is characteristic, they had some good results at home, where they tied Brazil and also beat Chile and Paraguay.
Uh-huh. And yeah, they don't always lose on the road. They usually get a few points per campaign, but as you pointed out there, they sometimes do lose all of their games. Well, there is no qualifying in Copa America, so let's take a look at their history in that tournament. They've passed the group stage only a few times in their history. In their early history, they registered 2 fourth-place finishes. That's 1927 and 1949. Before, well, I say surprisingly winning the Cup in 1963, but it's no surprise because
Because they were the hosts.
Yeah, exactly. So a huge advantage there. The mid-90s proved a good period, passing the group stage in 1995. That was the first time they passed the group stage since their 1963 win. And they passed that group stage actually not at home. So that was an achievement. The next tournament in 1997 was at home. And no surprise, they took second place in that one, their second best result. Though they managed a draw or two every time, they didn't win a Copa America game since 1997 until a good tournament in 2015. So no wins in an 18-year period there. But in 2015, are you going to cover actually that, Connor?
Yeah, I'll speak about that.
Yeah, you go ahead then.
So in 2015, they beat Ecuador, so a rare win for them, and then went to so and advanced to the quarterfinals. In the quarterfinals, they lost to Peru 3-1. However, in the group stage, it also tied Mexico, so not a bad result there. However, that was a very good run for them. They have actually only won one game this century in Copa America. So, building on what you said, Kevin, with failing to register win for 18 years up until that 2015 tournament.
Yeah.
Oh,
Yeah, I
sorry.
was going to ask about 2016 and 19.
Yeah, in 2016 and 2019, they lost all three games they played each time. In the most recent tournament, losing games to Brazil, Peru, and Venezuela.
Yeah. Well, in summary, they're a weak team in general. They had a good spell in the mid-90s. Qualifying for the World Cup in 1994 and coming second in Copa America when they hosted in 1997. That was really their only good spell, though. Beyond that, they've only had a couple of tournaments or campaigned where they performed well, and especially we judge that in their away from home record. Let's take a look at their recent performance and see if that holds through. Ooh, I forgot to show the Copa America graphic there, but as you can see, they generally get knocked out in the first round, and that's because they qualify automatically. Okay, now recent matches.
Yeah, in friendlies, they've kind of stuck to form. They've had their five more recent friendlies. Four of those have been on the road. They've lost all four of them. They do have a home win against Haiti, though, at the end of 2019. Looking at their World Cup qualification history, or recent games for 2022, they lost their first three games in qualifying. It began with a 5-0 loss in Brazil. And then home losses to Argentina and Ecuador. So the home form, which they need to be good, kind of deserting them early on. They follow that up with a draw against Paraguay and then beat Venezuela 3-1. Venezuela, again, one of the weaker teams. So that they have 4 points from five games so far. It sees them third bottom in the group, and traditionally that's where they're likely to finish.
Yeah, that away tie in Paraguay is a good one. The two losses at home are bad, and I suppose Ecuador is probably the South American team best equipped to deal with them at home because they play at high altitude also.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, and let's go to their scorers here. Of course, the main man being Marcelo Martins, or I think in South America he's known as Marcelo Moreno. What can you tell us about these guys, Connor?
Yeah, so he has four of their goal, or sorry, five of their goal, five of their 8 goals in qualifying. He's 33 years old and he plays his club football at Cruzeiro in Brazil. He has 24 goals and 82 appearances for the Bolivian national side. So that's actually a pretty good record on a relatively weak team. Also on the list is Juan Carlos Arce, or Arce. He's 36 year old, But he plays for a club in Bolivia called Always Ready. So hopefully he can take his club team's name and perhaps form into this tournament.
That's funny. They really have some good club names in Bolivia. Sorry, I had thought of one other thing I wanted to say about Bolivia, but it's eluding me now. So we'll just move on to the part three of the podcast, where we talk about the prospects we see for each of these teams. You know, how are they going to do in the group? How are they going to do in the final stages? And maybe point out that basically, if you finish high in the group, you're going to meet hopefully someone who's low in the other group. Do you have anything to say, or do you want to start with Argentina?
Yeah, I think let's start with Argentina. I think this tournament, I mean, there's 10 teams and eight teams will advance. So the group stage is really, as you mentioned, just kind of about placing the order in their group. Most teams are going to advance, and then you're hoping, if you finish high up in the group, you're hoping to play a weak team, but that may not be the case. But kind of, I think the tournament will kick more into high gear once you get into that knockout stage. Because most teams will be guaranteed passage after just a couple games of the group stage. So Argentina, they are the favorites and the odds-on favorites to win the group. It's something they probably should do or would be expected to do. And for them, I mean, this is their goal will be the same as it has been in the past several years, and that's to win the tournament and to try and get Lionel Messi his first trophy. I think Argentina have a good chance of winning this group, but they are facing a Uruguay and Chile team kind of on the edge of a tail end of a golden generation. And at their best, both Uruguay and Chile can be difficult teams. And Uruguay has, as you mentioned, tends to win some of the key games against Argentina, and Chile have beaten them recently in finals. So I think it's an interesting group where top spot is not guaranteed. What do you see?
Yeah, one strange thing I see is you would think there would be more pressure on them than ever because Lionel Messi's retiring and they're so anxious to get him a title. And I'm not sure I'm the best judge of their national mood, but there doesn't seem to be the crushing pressure that there usually was. And I wonder, actually, if the tournament moving out of Argentina to Brazil will kind of help them in terms of that expectation to win, which I feel that's really undermined them, certainly not a lack of talent.
Yeah, that's a good point. The home field advantage may have helped them, though they did not win the last time they hosted. But you're right, the pressure will be different on Argentina playing in Brazil instead of at home.
Yeah, and you've given pretty good coverage of Uruguay and Chile there. You know, fabulous teams, but aging teams. And everyone in the 2019 Copa America was kind of waiting for Chile to just be kind of done their run. And they weren't, and they proved a bit stronger. And it's the same group of players here. And that's true for Uruguay, too. I think both of them still may have one more good tournament in them. Do you see a lot between those two, Uruguay and Chile?
I don't see a lot between them. And actually, in the group stage, I don't see a lot between the top three. Argentina may have expectation getting, you know, getting to the final at least. But I think in the group stage, I see those three teams as possibly finishing in any order. I think the fact that four or five advance may kind of reduce the pressure to kind of do really well in the group stage. And it'll be interesting because the focus, you know, teams may have one eye on the knockout round and may even be resting players once they're guaranteed passage. We'll have to see how this new format influences matters. But I see it as being fairly competitive for first place among Argentina, Uruguay, and Chile.
Interesting. Well, I'm thinking if Chile, does kind of show their age and is the way everyone expected them to be in 2019. I should be careful about that because probably a lot of people didn't. Actually, I personally was a bit baffled by the talk of them being past their prime and stuff. It was only 2016 that they looked so strong. But I do wonder this time, if they are past their prime, they may be struggling with Paraguay, who are no slouches. You know, they have gotten past the group stage in the World Cup. What is it, 3 out of 4 times there? And they're not a weak team. And traditionally, I think Paraguay is stronger than Chile. I think they have about a head-to-head record.
Yeah, I agree. I think Paraguay are certainly capable of getting points off teams, especially in the group stage. They made it to the semifinals in 2011 and 2015, so that shows that they can be competitive. I certainly see them taking points off some of the teams and probably influencing the order. I still see fourth place as most likely for them. It's possible they could finish third in the group. But that's kind of where I see them.
Yeah, and do you give Bolivia any chance here?
I don't give them much chance at all, actually. I think they're historically by far the weakest team. They're once again playing on the road, which doesn't necessarily bode well for them. So I think I don't think they'll have much of an impact on the group in terms of points. And I would be very surprised to see them finish anything other than last.
Yeah, I remember the point I was going to make about Bolivia, and it goes back to the size of the country. I kind of had it in my head that, you know, they were one of the smaller countries in South America, just because their record is so poor. But in fact, they're a much bigger country than I thought. I went back to the graphic there, like 11.6 million. That's, you know, that's three times as many people as Uruguay. So I'm not really sure why they are so weak, I gotta say.
Yeah, and over such a long period of time as well.
Yeah, consistently. I wonder if forgive me if I'm offending, but I wonder if soccer is not as big a sport in Bolivia as it is in South American countries generally. Anyway, so there we go, the five teams. But come on, Connor, give it to me straight. What's your prediction here?
I'm going to say Uruguay have one more tournament left in them. I'm going to say Uruguay first in the group, then Argentina, then Chile, then Paraguay, and then Bolivia. I think Argentina will be strong, but they may take a bit of time to get going.
Interesting. Well, you can never count Uruguay out from doing something like that. I think I got to put Argentina at the top. I actually think that this might be the year where Lionel Messi does get his title. Not that that is what we're talking about at the group stage here. But first place, I would pretty much go in the order of the group. And I see the biggest point of contention being Chile and Paraguay, depending on if Chile is kind of moving into a retirement phase with a lot of their older players. But definitely not sure about that because, as I say, those players tend to be better with their countries than they are with their clubs. I think this is going to be a really interesting group, except for Bolivia, which is almost certain to finish at the bottom.
Right. What do you see for these teams as far as winning the tournament? Can any of these teams do it?
That's a really good question. I mean, we know Uruguay and Chile are capable of it, but I don't think they are this time around. I think Argentina will make it to the final as the usual. It's really just a question of whether they'll win there this time. And with Brazil looking so strong, it could be a really great final, but another second place disappointment for Argentina. I kind of hope they do it, though, because they've been a bit unlucky. How about you?
Yeah, I see Argentina, despite my prediction that they'll finish second in their group, I see them as the most likely team to reach the final. I do see Brazil, who are in the other group, as the strongest team, and they have the home field advantage. So Brazil would be my favorites to win this tournament. I do fear that it could be another silver medal for Lionel Messi. But as I said, with Uruguay, maybe they have one more year in them. Other than Argentina in this group, I think Uruguay would be the most likely to surprise at possibly getting to the final or possibly even winning it.
I'd have to agree with that. They're always tricky that way. And I don't see what you said as contradictory, because Argentina maybe not winning the group but getting to the final, because I think South American teams in general have looked very different in their qualifying, in their group stage, in their finals. There's not necessarily any correlation among those three.
Yeah, it'll be interesting for sure. I'm looking forward to it.
Great. Okay, well, that is it for our podcast on Group A, and we will be back with Group B. Thanks very much, Connor. I've really enjoyed talking to you about this.
A pleasure as always, Kevin. Thank you.
Okay, take care.